Can you describe to me what happened through your perspective on Wednesday morning in the North Carolina House of Representatives?
Republican House Rules Committee Chairman David Lewis, was the number two person in the House, told our Democratic caucus leader, Darren Jackson, that we would have no votes at the 8:30 a.m. session yesterday, that we would come back for votes later in the afternoon. That's pretty standard operating procedure, in that there might be a time that opens the session at the beginning of the day to do procedural movements and things that don't require members to be present, and then come back for votes later after we've had time to caucus and talk about what we're going to do on the votes that day. But what happened yesterday was that the Republicans were clearly told to be there at 8:30 when we had been told there were no votes. And so when the speaker called the chamber to order, they went ahead and voted on overriding the veto with only 9 Democrats present in the chamber, since most of us had been told that we didn't have to be there.
So there seems to be agreement that David Lewis and Darren Jackson had a conversation after the conclusion of session on Tuesday. There seemed to be some disagreement during the House discussions yesterday on Wednesday about what exactly was said. Is there any chance that this was a miscommunication, as it has been kind of represented from the House Republican side of things, or are we closer, in your opinion, to the quote bald-faced lie, as Governor Roy Cooper put it during a press conference on Wednesday?
Look, there's also evidence that there's a text message from David Lewis to a member of the media telling them that there would be no votes in that session, and staff was informed that there would be no votes, like nonpartisan central staff, and that they didn't need to be present for any bills during that session. So clearly, the only people who were told that there would be votes were the Republicans who showed up.
There's obviously been a lot of anger about this locally. Do you have anything to say just as an overall message, or general message, maybe I should say, to the constituents who see this as just another in the plot line of Republican rule in North Carolina?
Given that we're also under court order to draw new legislative maps, this is a week that just demonstrates that the Republicans will cheat on maps, and then they will lie in the legislative process. And by doing that, they're stealing your vote and they're stealing your power. People don't like politicians who lie, cheat, and steal. I don't like politicians who lie, cheat, and steal. We need a different legislature. We need something better for North Carolina.
As far as the vote on Wednesday regarding the veto override of the budget, that now is not totally done. It has gone to the Senate. There were 4 Democrats who voted for the budget in the initial round. That would be enough to be a veto-proof majority. Are you aware of any conversations that have been had with those Democratic senators in particular? I know one has said that he will vote to sustain the veto after yesterday's proceedings in the House.
I certainly call on my Democratic colleagues in the Senate to sustain the governor's veto and not to be complicit in the types of deceit that was done yesterday in the House. And so I hope that those Democrats will do the right thing, for not just for the Democratic process, but for the people in North Carolina. We need a better budget than the one that's before us. That's why the governor vetoed it. And so I hope that those Democratic senators will sustain the veto and force Senator Berger to do something Speaker Moore did not. We need to force Senator Berger to negotiate with Governor Cooper and figure out how to have a real compromise budget, as the governor has been trying to do.
Republicans said that Wednesday's vote happened because Democrats didn't show up to work. Can you give us a little background on the normal process of announcing these no vote sessions, and how often these sorts of skeleton sessions are held?
It's very common to have these types of skeleton sessions. Like, they happen several times a week, probably on average. I mean, sometimes it's just a part of a day that there won't be any votes during part of a day. And sometimes there are whole days where we're told there will be no votes that whole day. And because we're a part-time legislature, we have jobs and families and other things. We only make $13,951 a year as a base salary. We can't just be there sitting around doing nothing when there isn't actually work for us to do. And so we depend on leadership to be honest with us about what the schedule is going to be so that we can show up and do our jobs. I was in the building yesterday morning in my office. I got a message from someone that said, come to the floor immediately. It's maybe 2 or 3 minutes from my office to the floor of the House. And as I walked in, the vote was already closed. And so the speaker moved very quickly. My colleagues tried to speak on the vote. They tried to make procedural movements to delay the vote and slow it down so that people could get to the chamber and be there to cast our votes. And the speaker refused to allow any of that to happen. He may have lived by the letter of the law, but he broke all decorum and traditional protocol by acting in this way. And he did it because he couldn't do this in a fair vote. If all Democrats were present, the veto would have never been overridden. We've been sustaining the veto by showing up every day for the last 2 months.
Do you feel like there's been good faith negotiations, I guess, leading up to a budget being passed or since the budget was vetoed? And depending on that answer, how does this impact things just kind of generally in the legislative body, in your opinion, moving forward? Maybe, I don't know that it changes a whole lot on where we were on the budget in particular on those topics, but just general day-to-day work.
Well, it's pretty tough to imagine good faith after yesterday in any form. So I don't know what will happen next on budget. We didn't expect this to happen. And so I think it'll take a while to figure it out. And it's largely in the Senate's hands at this point. So call on senators of both parties to do the right thing the right way.
You mentioned redistricting earlier, and if there was the court order, I guess a week ago, a little more than a week ago, so you've got a little less than a week at this point to get new maps finalized, and there's been a lot of talk about the process of drawing those maps. What are you seeing or hearing from the committee members about that process? Has that been encouraging, maybe yesterday, notwithstanding of looking forward for operations in the legislature and getting new districts drawn in time?
The legislature has until September 18th to submit new district maps to the court. And the court has put some very significant restrictions on the legislature in terms of the process that needs to be used. I am concerned that I think even with those restrictions, the Republicans are still using a process that seems to show that legislators cannot be trusted to draw their own maps. And I think that the big takeaway from this is going to be that we need independent redistricting, that even under very closely guarded rules and under the watch of a court, this is still a process that has very little public involvement and uses criteria for drawing maps that are probably not what the general public thinks should be done in the name of fairness and democracy. So I'm skeptical of the ability to come out of this 2-week process with any legitimate set of maps, and I would fully expect that the court will be skeptical upon review of whatever gets produced by next Wednesday.
Yeah, and we are working on a tight timeline for that, but then moving forward to the 2020 election, and the court, I believe, already said that they hold the authority to move the primary, which would be in March. Are you projecting maybe a little ahead here to the November 2020? Under new maps, presumably, do you have a message or a thought on moving forward with that process to your constituents as they stand right now, I guess?
Well, we will definitely have new maps, and the maps can't help but be better for Democrats because of the extreme gerrymandering that the Republicans used. I just hope the maps are better for North Carolina, that they really draw districts that reflect North Carolina and North Carolina's voters. If Democrats can't win under fair maps, and we don't deserve to win, but everybody deserves to run under fair maps. And I do hope for those people in the local area that pay close attention to this and who are willing to volunteer and get invested in politics, they'll see that with new maps, we've got a chance for a very different type of election in 2020, which is a critical year because after 2020, the party that's in charge of the legislature decides how we draw the maps for the next 10 years, both for the legislature and for Congress. So this is about an election, not just about the next 2 years, but about the next 10 years.
And I know that I've asked you this before, so I don't mean to get you to say the same thing over again, but you've talked about if Democrats were to take the House or the Senate or both in 2020, immediately or at least early on in the process, introducing legislation for a nonpartisan or independent redistricting commission. Is that still where you stand on that?
I firmly pledge that an independent redistricting bill will be the first bill that I put my name on as a sponsor or co-sponsor if Democrats take the majority.